Chapter 51. After dropping off Dash, Archer drove over to Kemper's office, but there was a sign on the door that read, "Due to unforeseen events, the office will be closed indefinitely." Yeah, I guess a murder qualifies as unforeseen, to everyone except the person who killed him. Archer ducked into a Rexall drugstore. He got a cup of coffee at the counter and smoked a cigarette while he mulled over things. Then he climbed back into the Delahaye and motored over to Darling's bungalow. There was a new two-door brown Ford coupe in the carport, something Archer had not noticed the night before, but it might not have been there last night. He went up to the front door and knocked. It took a minute, but he finally heard footsteps.
"Yes,"
said Darling in a tortured voice through the wood. "It's Archer."
"Go away."
"I don't think you mean that."
"I damn well mean it."
"I need to talk to you, Wilma."
"Why?"
"Because Sheen's being murdered concerns you."
"I don't know."
"I know you slept with him last night, Wilma. And I know he was alive when you left him. But what I need to know is who put you up to it. Because whoever did might want to clean up loose ends, if you get my meaning." The door slowly opened, and she stood there in a thick white cotton bathrobe that went all the way to her bare feet. Her face was makeup-free, her hair was a mess, and Archer thought she was more beautiful now than she had been last night.
"Come in,"
she said curtly. He sat in a chair while she perched across from him. Archer saw an ashtray full of smoked cigarettes and a pitcher of something that was nearly empty. "You okay?" he said. "You don't look so good."
"No, I'm not okay. And what the hell do you mean you knew Sheen and I?"
"I saw you go into the room together, and I listen well at keyholes."
"You son of a bitch. You rotten little sneak."
She grabbed the pitcher to throw it at him, but he was too quick for the woman and snatched it away from her. He set it down out of her reach and said, "Calm down, Wilma. It's my job. Sheen is dead. We need to figure this out. You have a vested interest in doing so. I know you know that." She pulled a tissue from her pocket and dabbed at her eyes.
"What I know is that this is a god-awful nightmare for me."
"It wasn't so good for Sheen, either." She blew her nose into the hanky.
"You want a drink?"
"No, I'm good. And it's a little early for me."
"Well, mix me a martini, minus the olives, and then think of a way out of this hell."
He fixed the drink, handed it to her, and sat back down. "Tell me about last night."
"What do you want to know?"
"Who told you to sleep with Sheen?"
"How do you know anyone did?"
"Come on, Wilma. I'm trying to help you. I know you didn't want to be with the guy. Someone put you up to it. Who?" She looked at him in misery.
"I don't know, Archer. I really don't know who it was."
In her agitation, she finished off the martini, rose, and padded around the room, lighting a Camel she plucked from the bowl. "How can you not know?" She pivoted to stare dead at him.
"I'm not a whore, Archer."
"Wilma, no one's saying that you are, least of all me." She sat down on the arm of the chair he was in. She took another puff of her Camel, tilted her head back, and drilled the ceiling with the smoke.
I got an unsigned note yesterday. It was in an envelope in my mailbox. It had $1,000 in it, and a note that told me to sleep with Sheen last night at Midnight Moods. $1,000, Archer. That's more than I make in a year working for Kemper."
"I think you're underpaid then. But why do it at all? Why not just keep the money?"
"Because the note also said that if I took the money and didn't do it, well, that I would regret it."
"So it was a threat then?"
"Look, I didn't want to do it. But I also didn't want any trouble. And I didn't know who to give the money back to. And if I left it out on the porch or in the mailbox and somebody else swiped it, where would that leave me? With no money and somebody out there thinking I stiffed them."
She got up and started pacing again.
So I did it. I phoned and I arranged to meet Wilson at Midnight Moods."
"I saw you tackle him in the hall. I thought you were going to suffocate him with smooches." She put a shaky hand over her face.
"God, I can't believe I did it. It made me sick."
"I'm sure." She stopped and looked at him.
"What you must think of me."
"You did it for the money because you were caught between a rock and a hard place. A guy does it, he's smart like a fox because he's being paid to have fun. A woman does the same thing, and she's judged for it. I never really got that myself. I'm not judging you, Wilma. I don't have the right. She perched next to him again.
Where do they make guys like you, Archer? I'd like to buy a dozen.
Did the note tell you which room to go to last night?
Yes. They said it was empty, would be unlocked, and there'd be nobody to bother us.
Do you know that right next door is where Ruby Fraser was found?
Oh, my God!
She gripped his arm.
Look, Archer, I swear that he was alive when I left him. He was asleep, sawing logs, I swear.
I know he was, Wilma. She looked relieved, but then gazed at him suspiciously.
You gathered all that from listening at the keyhole?
I trained under some of the best keyhole listeners in the business.
So what do I do now?
I'd take you down to the police station where you could make a statement, only I don't trust Chief Pickett.
Do you really think I'm in danger?
Yes. Whoever sent you the note used you to set up Sheen. But what I don't get is how did they know he'd fall asleep? He might have left the room with you. Darling looked puzzled.
When we were going up to the room, he was yawning.
Archer snapped his fingers. Somebody slipped him a Mickey. Did he say where he was before he met up with you?
Yeah, he was having a drink in the bar.
Did he say who with?
No, he didn't. Maybe it was Kemper. You said he was there last night, too.
Other people must have seen you and Sheen together. I'm surprised the cops haven't been to see you.
They probably will be. And then what do I tell them? They'll never believe my story. They'll think I killed him. Shit!
She looked as miserable as anyone Archer had ever seen. We'll figure this out, Wilma. Now, there aren't a lot of people who could come up with $1,000, so that narrows the list of suspects. She looked up.
But why get Wilson out of the way? What's the big deal?
He's Kemper's campaign manager. It might hurt his election chances.
But if they really wanted to do that, why not just bump Kemper off? Then it's guaranteed he doesn't win.
How long have you worked for Kemper?
7 years. There aren't many office jobs for a gal around here that don't involve fetching dry cleaning and making coffee. I started out where the other girls are now and worked my way up. It might not sound like much to you, but it means a lot to me.
So who doesn't want Kemper to be mayor?
Anybody pulling for Alfred Drake, I guess.
Why is he running for mayor? She shrugged.
He was on the town council, so he has some experience.
I've heard that Drake might have some serious money men behind him. Vegas types, even mobsters. You think that's possible?
Hell, Archer. In this world, anything is possible.
Archer said, Kemper closed the office, and it's Friday, so you have the weekend, too. Can you go to some place where you can be safe? She puffed nervously on her cigarette.
I used to drive down to Ventura and stay at a place on the water. I could go there.
And do it. Is that your brown coupe out there?
Yeah.
Okay, why don't you pack and leave now? And give me the address just in case.
Just in case what?
Just in case I have to come and rescue you.
Archer, this is serious. Stop joking around.
I'm being dead serious, Wilma. And that neat little derringer you keep in your purse? Be sure to take it with you. Chapter 52. Archer's next stop was the town library. He hadn't been to a library in a while, but whenever he had gone, it had been for a good reason. In the past, it was just about choosing a good book to read. Now it was all about finding information that might help solve two murders. He spoke with the woman at the front desk. She was elderly with a granny hump, and also knowledgeable and enthusiastic. She guided Archer to a shelf and helped him find what he needed. He sat down with the books that dealt with California law and started to read. He was there for 7 hours. He made notes of everything and put the items back, thanked the librarian, and left. His next stop was the town hall, which he discovered was located on Sawyer Avenue, of course. It was a 3-story stone and stucco building with 3 faux bell towers, the ubiquitous red tile roof, and thick arched doorways. He made his way to the clerk's office, where a dour woman in her 40s turned out to be very helpful once he showed her his PI license. She actually seemed excited to be assisting in a very private investigation. She got him the records and ledger books that he asked for, though he had only a vague idea of what he was looking for. Archer sat for another hour and went through each of the items methodically, tracking things down and having in turn to request other files. He made copious notes and thought about what he had found. When he was done, he carried everything back up to her and thanked her for her help.
Did you get your answers?
Along with more questions, yes.
Well, isn't that always the case?
Archer headed to the waterfront, but he didn't go back to the harbormaster's shack. He went to the rental boatman instead, who Archer had found out on his first visit there was named Reggie McKenzie. He asked Archer how his ride out had been. A little bumpy coming back in, but that boat was solid as a rock. McKenzie smiled and pulled on the briarwood pipe clenched between his teeth.
Chris Kraft knows how to build a boat, that's for certain. Hell, I'd take that vessel pretty much anywhere without a worry in my head.
Archer gazed at the water. About 3 miles out, I nearly ran into a chunk of rock. It wasn't on the navigation map. McKenzie shook his head, looking angry.
How many times have I said that to folks around here, eh?
What's the deal with it?
Navy thing. Not many know about it because not many go out there.
I got pretty close, but I didn't see anyone or anything on it.
That's right. Navy moved out about, 6 months ago. War's long over. What they were doing there is over too, I imagine.
I noted that there was a big dock on the island. Handle a destroyer easy.
You're right about that.
McKenzie took his pipe out and pointed the bowl out toward the sea.
There was a stretch of land that was right at the waterline. Hazard to boats, I can tell you that. Had to be marked and all. Well, anyway, the Navy shipped in more dirt and rock and cement than you'd ever seen, mister. Then they built on what was out there and raised it way above the water. Solid as the land we're standing on right now, and high enough to where you don't have to worry about flooding unless you get a typhoon or such out there. I sat here and watched the cargo ships heading out every day. But back then the military did some extraordinary things. Heard they built that there Pentagon in less than 2 years.
But what was the point? I thought they took over all the Channel Islands.
I'll tell you what I heard from some of the military folks coming through here.
He settled back in his seat and pulled up his oilskin coat against the brisk breeze flowing in off the water as Archer leaned back against the door jamb.
Now, back in 42, I think it was, a Jap sub come right up to shore around here and opened fire with its deck gun and torpedoes. Did quite a bit of damage. Found out later another sub did the same thing off the coast of Santa Barbara, near the Elwood oil fields. Hit some fuel tanks and other such things. Now, nobody was killed, thank God, but it scared the hell out of everybody.
McKenzie took a moment to restuff and relight his pipe.
Anyway, it took so long for the Navy to get out there, them Jap subs were long gone. See, the Anacapa Island was the closest, and it was still too darn far away. So the Navy got his marching orders. They searched for and found that bit of land just at the waterline, barely 3 miles out, and built what they called a rapid response site on it. They had docks big enough for PT boats and even destroyers, like you said. They also put radar out there and laid minefields for them subs, and had observation towers and God knows what else. They even had a runway there to land planes. And I saw them ship out a big gun, too.
Archer thought back to the remnants of the Mark VI railway gun and nodded.
Right. Then what happened? Well, it operated all throughout the war. Kept the Japs off the coast here, I can tell you that. But hear guns firing out there from time to time. See the sky all lit up. Took a boat out once just to see and nearly got run over by a destroyer. Last time I did that. Then, like I said, about 6 months ago, it all went away. Ships went out there and pretty much dismantled the whole thing. I took my boat out and watched them do some of it. Pretty interesting.
Who owns it now?
Now that's a fair question, young man.
The man's eyes danced with a bit of excitement.
But I will tell you that some folks have been ferrying back and forth to that spot over the last few months.
What folks?
Well, that I'm not sure about.
McKenzie suddenly looked perplexed.
What?
Said Archer, who had noted the man's change of expression.
Well, I hadn't given it much thought before, but your asking made me think.
Think of what?
We had a mayor, a good one, name of Ben Smalls.
Archer tried to keep his features unreadable.
Right, I think I heard about him. Didn't he have an accident in his house? He drowned in his bathtub, poor fellow. He was a good mayor. Nice, polite young man.
Keeping his voice calm, Archer said, But what made you think of him?
See, he rented a boat from me about, 2 months ago. No, I take that back. It was my wife's birthday, so it was 6 weeks ago. Anyway, he went out to that there island.
How do you know that?
'Cause he asked me how to get there.
McKenzie eyed Archer.
Hey, now, did you go out there the other night? Just asking, 'cause your fishing story sounded, well, fishy.
Like I said, I almost ran into it. But as you know, it's not on the map he gave me. The man's suspicious look faded.
Oh, that's right, sure.
Did Smalls say anything to you when he got back here?
No, but he didn't look happy. I remember thinking, what's he all riled up about? Anyway, a couple weeks later, he's dead and buried. Makes you think, you know?
He snapped his fingers.
We can all go just like that. Have to enjoy every day we got, yes, sir.
Right, said Archer. Well, I hope you enjoy the rest of this day. Archer got back to the boarding house just in time for Callahan to confront him on the stairs.
Where the hell have you been? I'm going to be late.
Late? For what? She tapped her high heel impatiently.
It's Friday, Archer. You were going to drive me to Midnight Mood so I can sign my contract, and then I've got to start rehearsals.
Damn, that's right. Okay, I'm ready. You got your stuff?
I'll be down in 5 minutes, and then you better drive like you mean it. Wow. Archer, look at that,
said Callahan. They were on the road to Midnight Moods and had come upon a billboard with her picture along with the caption, If you loved Liberty Bonds, you're going to love her. Come see Liberty Callahan's debut at Midnight Moods, Friday at 10 sharp. That must have gone up pretty recently. I was out there this morning and didn't see it. She glanced at him.
And they used your idea.
You're famous, said Archer. Just don't forget me on the way up.
Don't be silly, whoever you are,
she said, slapping his arm, but her gaze was riveted on the billboard. Archer cut his speed so that she had longer to look at herself. He just had to grin, watching the woman gazing at her image. They parked in front of Midnight Moods, which was fairly empty at this time of the day. Later tonight it would be a different story, with large crowds coming to see the woman sitting next to him. On the side of the building was Callahan splashed 20 feet high. That wasn't here this morning either. They're really giving you the star treatment.
Well, I'll show them that I'm worth it.
So you ready? He said.
I've been ready for a long time, Archer.
They met with Dawson in her office, where Callahan inked her deal. Callahan showed Dawson her outfits, and the pair settled on a slick, silver sleeveless number with fringe along the short hem.
So does your agent there get his 10% or what?
Asked Dawson. Callahan shot Archer a surprised glance. He held up his hands and said, I was just being a friend. I don't want any commission.
Okay. We can go into rehearsals now. Later, we got a gal to do your hair and makeup. The stage manager will do your sound check and make sure the acoustics are good. I don't know if you know, but we're charging $5 admission into the theater for folks to see and hear you.
How are sales? Asked Archer.
We sold out,
said Dawson.
Now I hope people show up.
Why wouldn't they?
Said Callahan. Dawson glanced nervously at Archer and said,
We had some more trouble last night, but I think it'll be fine. Did you like the billboard we put up?
She added quickly, no doubt noting the puzzled look on Callahan's features.
And the one on the building?
Oh, yeah. They're terrific. I've never seen myself that big.
Where's her room? Asked Archer.
Follow me.
The room was on the second floor, near the end of the hall.
What do you think?
Asked Dawson. It was a 4-room flat, with a full kitchen, bedroom, bathroom, and a comfortable front room fully furnished.
This looks swell,
said Callahan, looking around, her eyes dancing with delight.
It should. It's the best we have.
She eyed Archer.
Pass your test.
If Liberty's okay with it, then it's okay by me.
Oh, hallelujah. Now let's go start rehearsal, young lady.
A few minutes later, Archer walked through the main bar area, only stopping when someone tugged on his sleeve and said, Sit. He looked down and saw Willie Dash perched in an armchair and cradling a cup of coffee in one hand. Archer sat across from him.
What are you doing here? Thought you went to get your car, and then we're going to do some piecing together.
How long do you think it takes to pick up a car? And there is that thing in the detective business about coming back to the scene of the crime, and I am piecing things together right here in this chair. So what are you doing here?
I brought my friend Liberty. She starts work here tonight.
She the gal plastered all over?
She is. Dash gave him a hiked eyebrow.
Well, lucky you.
It's not like that between us.
That's what they all say. Did you talk to Wilma, darling?
Archer filled him in on their conversation.
So she's off to Ventura,
said Dash thoughtfully as he sipped his coffee.
Is that a problem?
I don't know, Archer. I haven't quite got a handle on all this yet. Lot of moving parts.
Archer hadn't told Dash about going out to the island or his conversation with Reggie McKenzie, but he did want to run something by Dash. So the only reason there's a mayor's election is because the former mayor died in the bathtub. Is it possible he was murdered? Dash eyed him severely.
Of course Ben Smalls was murdered, Archer.
Archer sat back, a little surprised by the other man's emphatic response. But he didn't do anything about it. The police apparently never concluded one way or another.
I'm not a cop. I'm a private dick, so what exactly could I do about it? But look at it this way. Depending on who wins the election, certain things are going to happen in this town to benefit someone.
Do you think the murders are connected to the election?
They're both tied to Douglas Kemper, so I would say yes.
What do you think about Armstrong's take on the mob and boys from Vegas?
Why would they want to come here? Like Armstrong said, they can get their hooks into Frisco and L.A. and Santa Barbara with the same amount of effort, and they're all bigger prizes than Baytown.
Like you said, you think Pickett is on the take. Low-hanging fruit kind of thing, if they have him in their pocket. Dash nodded slowly.
That's a good deduction, Archer. Very good. So Pickett might be at the center of this, clearing out the way for those boys to come here.
So their preferred candidate is Drake the dentist. Why?
Maybe we need to have a talk with old Drake.
You know him?
Oh, yeah. Really smart guy. But he's a dishrag, Archer, with about as much curb appeal as a bag of trash. Kemper would win in a landslide if he's allowed to keep running.
If Kemper drops out, could someone else enter the race?
Deadline was last week. It's Kemper versus Drake, for better or worse.
He looked at his watch.
Drake will probably be home by now, so let's go see the Tooth Fairy.
Chapter 53
Alfred Drake's home was a large two-story dwelling made of red brick painted white. It had views of the ocean on an elevated plot of land that was lush and green and filled with palm trees, live oaks, and pretty much every native species in between.
Damn, how much does it cost to get your teeth fixed in this town? Said Archer.
He pulled the car to a stop in front of the columned veranda that spanned the entire length of the house, with a sea of emerald green grass spreading out before it.
For a while, Drake was the only quality game in town, and he made a tidy sum. Then he invested well, and he's also done some real estate projects around here. He's a sharp guy, like I said. I found out his father was in real estate in New York and made a small fortune, which went to Drake. He built this place about 5 years ago.
Archer gave him a sidelong glance. Why do I think you might have investigated Drake before?
Why, Archer, that's confidential.
But Dash tacked on a grin.
A number of years ago, some guy got really upset over a deal he did with Drake. He thought Drake had cheated him. Turned out my client was the one cheating, and just hired me to hassle Drake into a quick settlement. But Drake stuck to his guns. I always respected him for that.
A black woman in a maid's uniform answered the door and told him that Drake was out by the pool. She took Dash's card and left them there while she checked to see, as she put it, whether Mr. Drake is accepting visitors at this time. After she left, Archer said,
I thought we were going to see a dentist, not the president. The man can put on airs, noted Dash. In that regard, he's just like most politicians.
Right. Are there any honest politicians?
Sure. They're mostly all honest in the first 6 months. It's only the time after that where they convince themselves they can do no wrong, and everything that comes out of their mouths is the gospel, but all they really care about is getting re-elected.
Franklin Roosevelt was pretty good.
He was already rich. Nobody could touch him.
Archer gave him a dubious look.
So you're saying only rich people are incorruptible? Hell no. They're the most corrupt of all. But FDR was different. He was rich, but he inherited it, and then he got polio. That made him see the world in a different light. At least I think it did. He got the plight of the working men and women like nobody else since Teddy Roosevelt. Too bad we don't have more Roosevelts waiting in the wings.
The maid returned, and without a word escorted them back to the rear terrace, and left them there. Alfred Drake was tall and skinny with a sunken chest. He had few hairs left on his head, and had perhaps compensated for that by growing one of the biggest mustaches that Archer had ever seen outside of a carnival. He was dressed in a white terry cloth robe, and his pale, thin, bare legs protruded from underneath. Though the evening was cool, his droopy mustache and wet footprints in the pool surround showed the man had already taken a dip. He had sandals on his feet that revealed neatly trimmed toenails. He was holding a martini, complete with a trio of olives and a toothpick, and sitting at a table with an open white umbrella poking through a center hole. He was staring out toward the ocean and gave no indication he even knew they were there.
"Mr. Drake," prompted Dash.
Without looking at them, Drake pointed to two empty seats at the table. As they drew near, Archer could see that the bottom of the pool had inlaid aquamarine tile in the shape of a large stallion in full gallop. The rear grounds were as immaculate as the front. In the distance, Archer could see a muscular, bare-chested young man shoveling a hole with a large bush standing next to it, presumably waiting to be planted. Whether Drake was really staring at the ocean or the young man, Archer couldn't tell for sure. He thought the odds were 50-50. After they sat and put their hats on the table, Drake said,
"Well?"
He still had not turned to look at them, and didn't seem inclined to offer them a drink. Archer took out his notepad and readied his pen.
"This is Archer, my new associate," said Dash. "Am I supposed to applaud, or do you want to get to the point?" "Hope there's no hard feelings after that case I worked involving you."
"You were professional and honest, Willie," was Drake's surprising reply, at least to Archer, who was still sizing up the man's hostile attitude. Drake continued.
"It was your client who was neither of those things. I appreciated how you got him to back off when you realized the truth." "Well, thanks for being understanding. Now, we wanted to talk to you about the upcoming election."
Drake turned his chair around to face them.
"Why is it any of your concern?"
Before Dash could answer, a Persian cat ambled out from somewhere and jumped onto Drake's lap. He absently stroked the animal while he waited for an answer.
"Two people have been recently murdered."
"What does that have to do with me?" said Drake bluntly.
"Did you know them?"
"Why don't you tell me who they are, and maybe I can answer the question?"
"You don't know?"
said Dash skeptically.
"Enlighten me." "Ruby Fraser. She was a singer at Midnight Moods."
"I've never been there. It's not really my thing, if you get my meaning."
"So you don't know her?"
"I thought I just said that."
"The other victim was Wilson Sheen."
Drake flinched just a bit, causing the Persian to hiss. "I knew him. We weren't friends or anything, but I knew him through the usual social circles, and also from the election. He's running, or he was running, Kemper's campaign."
"Do you know of any reason why someone would want to kill him?" asked Dash.
"I just told you I didn't really know the man. I guess he had enemies. What man doesn't?"
"So how's the campaign going?" asked Dash.
"You've seen the ads in the paper and heard the radio spots, I'm sure, and the billboards where Kemper looks off broodingly into the distance, or the future, or maybe he's gazing at some woman's ass, who knows. Anyway, they're everywhere. And he owns a hotel and a country club and a winery, and has a beautiful home and a beautiful wife. And look at me and look at Kemper. Physical appearance shouldn't matter, but it sure as hell does. Just ask any woman. He's got that vote wrapped up."
"Women might just vote on the issues, not someone's jawline," noted Archer.
"I used to think that," said Drake in a tight voice. "But not anymore."
"So why are you running for mayor?" asked Archer.
Drake ran his gaze over Archer, and Archer didn't like the expression on the man's face. He involuntarily glanced over at the bare-chested man as he hefted the bush into the freshly dug hole.
"Oh, so you want to hear my stump speech?"
"Sure, why not?" answered Dash. Drake took a long, almost luxurious, sip of his martini before setting the glass down and munching on one of the olives he plucked from the drink.
"Baytown is a place of the haves and have-nots. I'm one of the haves. Sure, I worked hard, but my parents gave me an excellent education, and I inherited wealth from them. So when I moved here from the East Coast, I had a lot of advantages. However, with that said, opportunities should be equal, and we don't have that here. Take Sawyer Armstrong as an example."
Drake glanced at Dash, perhaps to see how this provocative statement was playing with him.
"Okay. How so?" asked Dash.
"His initial wealth came from old family money. Now, no one can say that the man is not ambitious and all that, but he had quite the boost, because the Armstrongs have owned this town for nearly a century. They own the lion's share of the wealth and leave the crumbs for just about everyone else. I stand for better working conditions for the poor, more money for education and health care. We have kids dropping out of school and working adult jobs, and no one gives a damn. We treat the Mexicans coming across the border to pick our vegetables and fruit as less than human. That's wrong. That needs to change.
He paused and looked thoughtfully at his pool. But in the long run, people like the Armstrong should thank me for the positions I take.
Why is that? Asked Archer.
Because the have-nots greatly outnumber the haves. But the have-nots will only put up with so much for so long. Then they start scaling the walls of the elite's estates, and the results will not be pretty. I include myself in that group. I'm not asking the Armstrongs of the world to give up their wealth. I'm asking that others have the full opportunity to earn their share by being fairly compensated for their work. Right now the system is rigged. It makes a laughingstock out of the American dream.
You actually sound like FDR,
noted Dash, glancing at Archer.
Good. Be sure to vote, said Drake.
Did you know Ben Smalls? Asked Archer. If Drake was surprised by this segue, he didn't show it.
Yes, he was a friend, a good friend. We got to know each other when we served on town council together, and then when Ben became mayor, we worked on projects together. The stump speech I just gave, a lot of it came from my discussions with Ben. He was of the same mindset. He is greatly missed.
I understand his father was partners with Sawyer Armstrong, said Archer.
Andrew Smalls was a good man.
But he killed himself, noted Archer. Drake's head dipped.
Yes, that was so out of character for Andrew.
And do you think his son's death was just an accident? Asked Archer.
Drake picked up his drink again and took another sip.
He set it down and pressed the sleeve of his robe against his moistened lips.
That's what the police say.
Some folks think he might have been murdered, noted Dash.
Well, you can't control what some people might think, replied Drake.
Just like that, you dismiss your friend's death, said Dash.
What do you want me to do about it? Drake shot back.
Archer said, Well, maybe as mayor you can do something about it, because it doesn't seem like the police did much of an investigation.
A small smile escaped Drake's lips. It was the saddest smile Archer had ever seen. Drake said, Maybe I could, in an ideal world. When you find one, let me know.
Nothing else you can tell us to help our investigation? Said Dash.
Excuse me, but who exactly is your client in all of this?
That's confidential.
Really? Baytown is still manageable when it comes to gossip, and my gossip tells me you're working for my opponent.
And if I told you that finding the truth trumps that?
Then I think you'll be trying to sell me the Golden Gate Bridge next.
Dash grinned.
You know, just to be brutally honest, I told Archer here that you were pretty much a dish rag without a chance in hell of beating Kemper.
I've been called worse.
But now I see you in a different light, and it's a much better picture.
Don't patronize me, Willie.
If I was patronizing you, Alfred, you'd know it.
Drake took a moment to study Dash's earnest features.
All right. I wish you luck with your investigation, even if it does help Kemper beat me.
Maybe it will, and maybe it won't, said Dash. But you'll always be a damn good dentist.
Drake chortled.
Maybe I'm seeing you in a different light now, too, Willie. What a thunk.
Dash rose, and so did Archer, who said, So you really think you have no chance against Kemper?
I have no chance. We'll just have to see, won't we? Stranger things have happened.
They left him sitting there, stroking his cat and staring out toward the ocean. Chapter 54
He doesn't strike me as a man who is sold out to mobsters from Vegas, said Dash as they drove back to town.
He actually seems like a good guy who cares about people.
Like he cared about the young buck planting the bush, said Dash.
Thought you might have noticed that. Any rumors about him on that score?
None that stuck, and for a guy like Drake, you'd need some hard proof, otherwise he'll sue your ass off.
But you did refer to him as the Tooth Fairy, or am I reading too much into that? Dash's features became deadly serious.
That sort of behavior is illegal, Archer. It comes under sodomy and sexual perversion. You can go to prison for a long time for that, and you have to register as a sex offender.
Really? Dash looked uncomfortable.
Hell, some private eyes spend their careers drilling holes in walls and taking pictures of folks engaged in such activities.
Why?
Because they're hired by neighbors, disgruntled family members, or people who believe themselves to be the guardians of morality. Folks went to prison and often died there, or were sterilized to cure them. My take is, if a guy's different, so what? Live and let live.
Didn't figure you'd be sympathetic to that sort of thing, Willie. Dash looked out the window.
Yeah, I guess I look like an old fat son of a bitch with all the prejudices that come with it.
He patted his chest.
But my ticker ain't just there to keep my blood pumping, Archer. Doesn't the good book say to love thy neighbor?
The one I read does.
Yeah, well.
He lapsed into silence and ran his fingers along the car window.
Did you ever do that sort of work? Spying on people?
Dash slowly nodded.
For about a year, and then I'd had enough.
So what happened?
None of your business.
Okay, but I hope I've proved over the short time we've worked together that you can trust me.
I don't trust easily, Archer.
And you think I do?
You got your flask?
Archer handed it to him, and Dash took a belt, screwed the cap on, and passed it back to Archer. He settled in his seat and started smoothing down his tie.
One day a lady comes in and hires me to spy on her 15-year-old nephew. She told me she just knew he was engaged in lewd behavior. But when she told her sister her suspicions, the sister was having none of it. Said she needed proof. So the lady comes to me. Later I realized the broad just hated her sister and wanted to use the kid to stick it to her. But she was paying me money I really needed. So I took my little bag of dirty tricks and went to work. I followed the kid to this abandoned building that had the rep of being a safe place for guys who were that way. I snuck in, got the lay of the land, figured out where he was, and drilled a hole in the wall and took my little pictures of him and another kid. I handed them over to my client, who promptly passed them over to the boy's mom.
What happened?
The mom and dad apparently went berserk on the kid.
That must have been tough for the boy.
I wish that were the end of the story, Archer. See, the client wanted more evidence.
Why?
She told me her sister wasn't sufficiently alarmed by her son's perverted qualities. Her word, not mine. She wanted me to go back and get even more dirt. I learned later she just wanted to rub her sister's nose in it.
So what did you do?
I went back with my camera to my dirty little hole and... And when I looked through it, there he was hanging from the light fixture. I rushed in, cut him down, and tried to revive him, but he was already dead, Archer. Only 15, and he was dead.
Jesus.
Yeah, I talked to Jesus a lot after that one, after I drank enough whiskey to fill Drake's swimming pool. Took me a year to get back to work, pretty much lost every damn thing I had. And you know what?
What?
I got off a lot easier than the kid did.
I'm sorry, Willie.
Don't feel sorry for me,
Dash snapped.
I had it coming. He didn't.
Neither man said anything as they drove along. Dash was staring out the window, and Archer kept his gaze on the road. Finally, Archer said, "So that's why you took a leave of absence?" Dash turned to look at him.
You ever been so ashamed of yourself? You can't even stand to look at your reflection in the mirror.
Archer slowly shook his head. No.
Good. I hope you never get there.
They drove back to the office building. Then they took the elevator up and settled in Dash's office. The man poured out two fingers of Beam each, sat across from Archer and said,
Okay, you brought up the trust issue, so let's talk that through.
Archer took a sip of the Beam and said warily,
Okay.
When were you going to tell me that you've been asking questions about that island, Archer?
Archer set his drink down and leaned back in his seat.
I did tell you about the island, but you blew it off, so I thought I'd go it alone, for now.
Okay. For now is over.
How'd you know? Were you following me?
If I were, you'd never know it. Reggie McKenzie is a buddy of mine. He's a sloppy drunk, but okay when he's off the booze. He told you all about that chunk of rock's history. You also went to the library and looked through a bunch of materials. Sharon Astor helped you there. Nice gal, but too highbrow for the likes of me. Then you went to the town hall and did the same. Linda, the town clerk, is also a friend of mine.
You got lots of friends.
It's not by happenstance. Most PIs cultivate them. At least, the good ones do.
How'd you find all that out so fast?
I just piggybacked on you, Archer.
So you were following me.
I never said I wasn't. Library, town hall, McKenzie, back to your boarding house to pick up your lady friend,
and then up to midnight moods. I just had my cup of coffee and waited for you to show.
You said you were going to pick up your car and do some thinking.
I did pick up my car, which I used to follow you, and I did do some thinking. I was thinking about you.
Archer smiled appreciatively.
Mr. Shaw said you were the best, Willie, and he was right.
I'm not busting your chops, Archer. Yes, you did mention the island, and yes, I did blow it off, and you did what I would have done. You followed up a hunch on your own. So let's compare notes.
Archer took out his notepad. I found out in the real estate records at the town hall that the island was sold by the federal government 6 months ago to a company called Stearman Enterprises. Even though it was federal property, I guess Baytown had to have a record of it because Stearman has its office here. The man listed on the paperwork for Stearman was Douglas Kemper, interjected Dash.
Right, said Archer. How'd you know? I never mentioned it to the town clerk lady.
Great minds, Archer. Now, at the library you researched certain laws and statutes.
Archer consulted his notepad again. A state has all water rights up to 3 miles off its coast. That's important for fishing rights and the like. The feds control everything out to 12 miles.
And anything beyond that is international waters, added Dash.
But in 1947, the Supreme Court ruled that the federal government owns all the seabeds off the California coast, even within the 3 miles. It's just the water the state controls.
The Supreme Court? How'd you think to check that?
When I was in college, I wanted to be a lawyer. Things didn't pan out, but I studied some law and then worked with an attorney. I learned a lot.
So this pertains to the island?
Right. When the Navy was done with it and pulled out, the federal government assumed its rights to the island. Along came Stearman and bought those rights. I think the law really was meant to deal with oil and gas rights. You have to drill into the seabed to get to those.
That's right, agreed Dash.
But where does the mayor come into this? That I couldn't find. I mean, if the state governor has no power over that island, why would a mayor?
Archer paused, recalling a snippet of conversation. But your buddy Reggie McKenzie did tell me something interesting. He said that about 2 weeks before he died, Ben Smalls took a boat ride out to that island, and McKenzie said when he came back he did not look happy.
Fascinating, said Dash, his mind clearly moving at high speed.
Beth told me that his old man Andrew hanged himself in his barn.
That's right, he did. I wondered how you knew that when you mentioned it to Drake.
I also took a boat and went out to the island. It's bigger than you'd think, and you can reach it in about 15 minutes. And there's something going on out there. I found survey stakes in the ground and a post with the name Lancet Surveyors and Architectural Group on it.
Dash rubbed his cheek.
So there's going to be a building put up.
Right. And there's something else.
Archer looked at the man nervously.
Is this where you tell me what you haven't told me so far?
That night I saw Beth Kemper. I was down at the harbor. I saw a boat coming into shore close to 3. It was Armstrong's boat, and he and Hank and Tony and some other folks were on it. I'm sure they'd been out to that island. That's what got me thinking about something like that in the first place. Beth Kemper pulled into the parking lot as they were heading to their cars. She and her old man had a heated argument. I followed her to the diner.
And you didn't tell me this before because...
I don't have a good answer.
If you had pulled this from the get-go, Archer, you'd be looking for another job. But I now know you got the chops and the instincts. And I was clearly holding back from you, so there we go. I just got some of my own applesauce thrown in my face. Now let's look at this again. Armstrong went to the island. Kemper's on the documents of the company that bought the property. 15-minute ride out is pretty convenient for carrying folks back and forth who might just want to stay for a few hours and not overnight.
But what sort of place would that be?
We wait until later, then go find out.
Chapter 55
A gumshoe's stock in trade, Archer.
Dash said quietly, as he pulled the small leather case from his pocket and opened it, revealing a neatly arranged set of small tools. They were at the back door of the offices of Lancet Surveyors and Architectural Group, 2 blocks off Sawyer Avenue. It was a 2-story nondescript brick building. If this was the height of the firm's design powers, thought Archer, he might look elsewhere if he was ever in the market for inspired architectural work. Dash inserted 2 different lock picks in the upper lock and worked away. After 20 seconds, Archer heard a click.
Dash next inserted one of the tools in the lower lock and did the same. Then he put his kit away, turned the knob, and opened the door to the darkened building. Inside, Dash whispered to Archer,
"There's an old cop that makes the rounds of these buildings at night. He's pretty much deaf and blind, but he carries a gun. He'll never hit anything on purpose, but will by accident. So we can't turn on any lights."
Archer nodded. They felt along the walls until they reached a door. They went through it and eyed the space they were in. There was enough moonlight along with the streetlight's glare coming in through the broad windows to give them reasonable illumination. They searched the rooms on the lower level, found nothing, and took the stairs to the upper level. The door of every room up here was unlocked except for one. That naturally garnered their interest, and out came Dash's lockpick kit once more. The door was soon defeated, and they walked into the windowless office. Dash slipped a small flashlight from his pocket and turned it on. It was more than enough light to see what they needed to see. On a large table in the center of the room was an architectural mock-up of a series of enormous buildings without roofs.
"The Golden Rock," said Dash, reading off a sign on one of the buildings.
Then he cast his gaze lower to look at some drawings that had been set next to the building mock-up.
"What does that mean?" asked Archer.
"Well, for starters, the rock is what they call Alcatraz, but it's sure as hell not golden, and this sure as hell isn't a prison."
Dash looked over the buildings more closely.
"Damn, Archer, these are casinos."
He pointed to the interiors of the buildings, where miniature pieces of furnishings and equipment were set.
"See there? Craps tables, roulette wheels, poker and blackjack tables. Over there is the cashier. In that corner, the mother of all bars. Over there, slot machines."
"They're building gambling casinos on that island?" said Archer.
"Looks like it. And I've been to Vegas, and if this place is to scale, it's way bigger than anything they've got there. Now you remember me telling you that they outlawed gambling boats off the coast?" said Dash.
"Yeah, which means this building makes no sense unless they're going to overturn the law."
"That would be incredibly difficult, because gambling is actually outlawed in the California state constitution. And I told you our now Governor Warren led the drive against gambling boats when he was attorney general. The big lawsuit was about Santa Monica Bay. Point being, where did you measure from the shore out 3 miles? Did you start at Santa Monica itself, or the two farthest points out of the bay? See, the latter would put you in really heavy water, where folks aren't going to gamble and puke at the same time.
When I was out there, I saw there's a big breakwater west of the island, so I imagine it's pretty calm waters around the island for the most part."
"Another reason to buy and develop it."
"So it's serious money, then?"
"Serious enough. Before Warren pulled the plug, a guy named Tony Cornero, with his ship the Rex, was making $200,000 a month in profits, just one ship."
"But gambling is still illegal. Like you said, it's in the state constitution."
"Not so fast, Archer. In 1948, Truman signed the Noland Bill. It outlawed gambling in all territorial waters, as well as the transport of folks to those gambling vessels."
"Okay, but—" Archer caught himself. "Wait a minute. The law only applies to ships?"
"That's right. If you're on land off the coast that is not under the jurisdiction of California, there's apparently no applicable law against gambling, and no law against ferrying folks out there to gamble."
"But hold on. If the governor was so against gambling on boats, why would he allow it on land?"
"The Navy built that island, and even if they hadn't, it's just over 3 miles out, and there's no dispute about the measurement from the shore here the way the coastline is configured in Baytown. So California has no say in the matter. It's in federal waters."
"But Catalina Island and the other Channel Islands are even farther off the coast. Why hasn't anyone tried to get gambling on them?"
"Because even though the military is all over them, they're officially part of California. So the governor has control over what happens there. There was some question about whether the treaty signed with Mexico way back that ceded northern Mexico to the U.S. included them, but a few years ago Mexico confirmed they have no rights to them. But even if they could be used for gambling, they're a lot farther out, Archer, and in heavy water. You want to spend an hour or two or three in heavy seas to play blackjack or craps,
and drink your fill and come back in heavy seas and stand at the gunwale and contemplate killing yourself because you're so seasick?
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, sometimes it really is the little things. That island is in the perfect location to be a gambling joint. A fast ferry ride out and back in relatively calm waters. That's why the ships were so popular. But this island's setup is even better. The floor's not moving while you're rolling the dice.
But they could outlaw anybody getting ferried out there.
Guess who controls that in each locality, Archer?
The mayor?
Bingo. And the town council. Which explains what happened to Ben Smalls, and why this election is so important to some folks. And Kemper's Country Club is right on the water, and has a marina with a big dock. They could have the ferries leave from there.
But if President Truman signed a bill about boats, what's to stop him signing a bill about an island?
If Kemper was a real smart guy, and I'm thinking he is, he's paid off some powerful folks in D.C. to make sure there's no Noland Bill number 2, and that the state of California is not going to make this a priority. Hell, America's just now digging out of a war. They want some fun. Now, gambling is fun. Sure, most lose their shirts, but they're smiling while they get stripped naked. And if one ship can make 200 thou a month, what do you guess a bunch of mammoth casinos out there could do? Folks will do a lot for that much dough.
Well, the short time I was in Reno, I can vouch for that. Casinos are raking it in.
You have to follow the money, Archer. It usually takes you where you need to go.
Then Armstrong and Kemper are in this together?
Could be, said Dash.
But then who's trying to blackmail Kemper into getting out of the race?
How about Drake?
But he seemed like a straight shooter with good motives.
Drake is an idealist. He may believe if Kemper gets in there, it's the same as having Armstrong in charge again. He knows he can't win the election on the up and up. There's too much money and other things aligned against him. So he finds or makes up dirt on Kemper and tries to win the race that way so he can get in there and do a lot of good.
And the murders of Fraser and Sheen? You think Drake is involved in those?
Haven't figured those out yet. And Archer?
Yeah?
Remember this, son, if you remember nothing else. What I just laid out is a theory. Theories are not the truth. To find the truth, a gumshoe's got to keep digging.
Chapter 56. Archer drove back to Midnight Moods, and was in the audience when Callahan made her formal debut later that night. To say she was a success would have been like saying the Allied countries had fought to a draw with their Axis counterparts. The theater was filled to standing room capacity, and Archer noted, with some surprise, that the number of women in the audience roughly equaled the number of males in attendance. The curtains had parted, and out had marched Callahan in the outfit she and Dawson had selected. Her long, dramatic strides bore the confidence of someone at home in the spotlight. Indeed, her smile seemed to outshine the stage lights. When she reached the microphone, Callahan motioned at the piano man to prime his fingers. He started to play, and his skill was obvious. Yet when Callahan opened her mouth, and the sounds poured from it, Archer didn't give the man tickling the black and white keys another thought. 1 hour later, the last note of her final song held in the air like cannon smoke after a 21-gun salute. She took a bow, stood straight, and let the appreciation of hundreds of people rain down on her for holding them in luxurious captivity for the previous 60 minutes. A man in his 50s seated next to Archer elbowed him and said,
"Damn, son, is she a keeper or what?"
Archer smiled and nodded, and concluded that Callahan was right where she was meant to be, in front of large crowds, and sending them into a better existence than reality ever could. As his gaze ran over the audience, Archer spotted him. He bent forward for a better look. Yes, it was definitely the man. Douglas Kemper hadn't grieved long for his campaign manager. He was in the front row, cigarette and drink in hand, and seemed to be fixated on Callahan. Archer went backstage after the show to see her. She was in her small dressing room with Liberty freshly stenciled on the door. There were baskets of flowers littering the floor, while she sat in front of her mirrored vanity table and reapplied her stage makeup.
"Well?"
she said, looking at him in the mirror. I think you did okay.
Well, don't give yourself a heart attack slinging out praise, Archer.
Do you want me to say you're a star? Okay, you're a star, Liberty. But you don't need me to tell you what all those people already did. And you had as many ladies as gents in the audience. I'd say that's something, all right?
You got your flask?
She asked, giving him a pretty smile. He handed it across, and she took a sip.
So, that was just the first act. I've got three more sets, and then some handshaking and drinks with some of the big players here, and the local rag is going to interview me and even take my picture.
You good with all that?
Hell, Archer, I was born for that.
Yeah, I guess you were. She lit up a Camel, blew smoke out, and swiveled around to look directly at him.
I heard someone else got killed here. That's what Dawson was referring to, right?
Wilson Sheen. He worked for Douglas Kemper.
Kemper, huh? Someone told me he was in the audience tonight.
He was, in the front row, looking very appreciative of your many talents.
Moneybags, right?
And married to a very lovely woman, so don't get your hopes up.
So he has connections to Frasier and the Sheen guy. Is he a suspect in your book?
Everyone's a suspect in my book, Liberty.
You wanted me to be your spy here. Should I start with Kemper?
Archer hesitated. You know what I told you before probably wasn't a good idea. It could be dangerous.
I can be dangerous, Archer. Or have you already forgotten?
Yeah, well, you're dangerous when someone is threatening you. These guys don't wait around for that.
You're worried about me, Archer. That's very touching.
I am worried about you. Two people have bought it in this joint over a really short time.
Well, just so you know, I worry about you, Archer. And I've done a little snooping already since I've been here.
What do you mean?
I'm observant. I keep my eyes and ears open.
And what did you find out?
Oh, so now you're okay with me spying?
Said Callahan. Liberty!
Okay, okay. Anyway, I finished my dinner and took my cup of coffee and found a little room to just have some quiet time and get my nerves under control.
And? Said Archer expectantly.
And I heard some noise in the room next door, and your name came up.
Archer frowned. Who was it?
It was those same two thugs that roughed you up before, Archer.
Hank and Tony. But how do you know what they sounded like? You only saw them before. They didn't say anything.
Easy. When they mentioned your name, I snuck out and peeked through the keyhole.
Liberty, that was a big risk.
My whole life has been a big risk. Anyway, I saw them.
And what did they say about me?
Oh, that they were going to kill you.
Archer sat back and dead-eyed her. Thanks for saving the best part for last.
You can take care of yourself, Archer. I've seen that. And now that you're forewarned, well, my money's on you over those two goons.
They say why they want to kill me?
I heard them mention you were snooping around an island?
Archer told her about the architectural mock-ups he and Dash had found and their connection to the island, and then his suspicions about the death of Benjamin Smalls.
A casino, huh? Makes sense. And dying in your bathtub, Archer? Please, that's mob stuff. They either machine gun you or do the ankle grab in the tub and under you go.
How come you know so much about that stuff?
You think the mob passed Reno by for some reason?
Archer looked at her closely. Is Max Shiner part of the mob?
I got out, Archer. Read into that what you want. You got a gun?
I do.
And you got your aluminum knuckles?
He nodded. And I'm wearing underwear, too, he said with a grin.
Really? I'm not.
His features sagged and his cigarette drooped. Not now, Liberty, for Christ's sakes. She smiled demurely.
What's your next move?
He rose and put his hat on. In the room where you overheard them?
Go right down this hall, turn left and then right again. Second door on the left.
He tipped his hat. You got great gams and a great voice, but you've also got a great brain. Don't let anybody ever tell you otherwise.
You got style, Archer. Don't let anybody ever say you don't.
Chapter 57 The door to the room was standing open, and it was empty, Archer could see. Hank and Tony apparently had flown the coop. He walked out to the terrace, found a seat, ordered a gimlet and a rack of olives, and because he hadn't had his dinner yet, a roast beef sandwich with a side of potato salad. He drank and ate, and was lost in thought until he heard the voice.
You don't look so good, honey.
He looked up to see it was the same waitress who had taken care of him and Kemper. Nah, I'm fine. Hey, you seen Kemper tonight?
I'm not that lucky.
You ever seen any other skirt here reel him in?
Not a one. And there wasn't a lack of effort. Least it ain't just me, right?
Right. Hey, you know Hank and Tony, Sawyer Armstrong's bouncer boys?
Sure.
They're here, right?
They were. Seen them leaving, oh, about an hour ago.
You ever try your chances with them? She planted a hand on her hip.
Hey, fellow, I'm not that desperate. And I like my guys with a little class. I mean, I don't even think those goons can read. I got standards.
Archer slipped her a buck and added a wink to it. Thanks, and keep aiming higher. Who knows, you might just end up running General Motors one day. She tucked the dollar down her blouse.
What a comedian. You should try vaudeville.
As she walked off, Archer checked his watch. He decided it was time to drive up the mountain again, and maybe bag two for the price of one. The Bentley was gone, but the Triumph and the Phantom Rolls were out front. The door opened and the same servant appeared. He looked at Archer like he'd never seen him before. Are Mr. and Mrs. Kemper in?
Who shall I say is asking, sir?
It's Archer. I was here before with Willie Dash.
It is very late, Mr. Archer. I believe you should come back.
It's all right, Chen. I'll see Mr. Archer.
Beth Kemper had appeared next to her butler.
Follow me, Archer. You look like you could use a drink.
And so just like that, Archer followed her. He liked following her. He liked how she moved, like a panther slinking through the brush. It was inspiring, actually, simply how the lady walked. You couldn't teach it, he knew. You could either do it or you couldn't, and this lady could do it in spades, just like Callahan. She took him into one of the rooms he and Dash had passed on their previous visit. It was all marble and white and cold, and despite all that, interesting. He stared at a large figurine of a naked woman looking at something over Archer's right shoulder. He pointed his hat at it. Does it cost more not to have clothes on? She sat beautifully on the couch, her bright red skirt fanning out and covering her legs all the way to her calves. The blouse above it was a creamy white. She looked like some sort of exotic flower in full bloom.
In life it usually does, Archer. So why not in art? Would you like a drink? I'm going to have one.
You look very comfortable sitting there, so let me do the honors. Dry Manhattan do the trick? She smiled and waved her hand at the bar. He guessed they had a bar in every room, and wasn't that just the stuff of everyone's fantasies? He poured and measured and jiggered his way through the concoctions. He presented the Dry Manhattan to her and took a seat facing the woman. They raised the glasses to each other and took sips. She said,
And what can I do for you so late at night?
He dabbed a bit of vermouth off his lips. I think your father might be mad at me again.
Why do you say that?
Well, you know Hank and Tony gave me the once-over when your father learned that we had come up here to question you.
But I thought that was all forgotten and forgiven after we met at his house.
But then I was a bad boy a second time and gave them more reason to give me the treatment again.
And what exactly did you do now?
If I tell you, you'll tell your father, right?
Not if you don't want me to.
A smile eased across Archer's face. Now that's a good line, Beth, although Willie doesn't want me to call you Beth. She set her drink down, took out her cigarette case, tapped a smoke on the top of the coffee table, and lit up.
Why is that?
Something about different classes of people. You're up here on the mountain, and I'm down on Porter Street with the dirty rabble.
I don't see it that way, Archer. I really don't.
Anyway, your instincts were right the other night. I did follow you to that diner, which meant I saw you and your father in the parking lot of the wharf, which of course means I saw him come in on his boat from visiting that island that a company with your hubby's fingerprints all over recently bought from the feds. Kemper sat back, tapped ash into an ashtray, and took a swallow of her Manhattan.
You were a busy boy then, although I have no idea what you're talking about. I thought you were going to tell me you burned down one of my father's olive trees.
So the island was owned by the feds, and now it's not. It's owned by your husband, apparently. No, it's damn well not. This didn't come from Beth Kemper. It came from her husband. They both turned to see him standing in the doorway, his hat in hand. His necktie was undone, his shirt was wrinkled, his hair was disheveled, and he didn't look like the sparkling golden boy at this precise moment in time. Beth rose and said in a concerned voice,
"Douglas, are you all right?"
There was genuine concern in both her voice and expression. "No, Beth, I'm not. I'm really not, honey." He paused and looked at her. I just need some help." Douglas walked forward while Archer watched both of them closely. Beth reached her arms out to him, and Douglas did the same, and a moment later they were wound as tightly as wire on a coil. They stood like that for a full 10 seconds before they stepped back from one another. Wilma Darling was right. He does love his wife. Douglas looked at Archer.
"I have no interest in that island."
"Paperwork filed in the town hall says otherwise. You're listed as the chairman of the board."
"Anyone can list anyone else."
"Any idea who might have listed you?"
"No, no idea."
"What was the name of the company?" "Stearman Enterprises." The Kempers exchanged nervous glances. "Yeah," said Archer. "That was the model of your mother's plane, the Stearman 75. Someone's being either ironic or downright cruel." She looked at Douglas.
"Do you know anything about this? I want the truth."
"No, I swear. I'm involved with no company by that name. And I wouldn't have named it that."
"The money behind Alfred Drake, maybe?" suggested Archer.
"Maybe," said Douglas doubtfully.
Archer shook his head. "Wrong. There is no money behind Drake other than his own. He's getting swamped by the bucks you and your father-in-law are throwing at this election. He knows he's going to lose." He glanced at Beth before saying to Douglas, "Would you say your vision of Baytown coincides with what Ben Smalls had in store?"
"I would say so, yes. I know what it's like to be wealthy, but I also know what it's like to be poor."
"And Alfred Drake also admired him, or says he did."
"I believe they were friends, yes."
"And you were friends with Smalls too, correct, Mrs. Kemper?" Douglas said, "His father was partners with Sawyer. You two grew up together, and he was at that luncheon."
"When my mother died,"
said Beth, without looking at him.
"But I met him other times, too. We were friends."
"Now that's interesting," said Archer. "Would you like to tell us what those other times consisted of?"
"No, I wouldn't,"
she said heatedly, which answered the question for Archer pretty well. Douglas fast walked over to the bar and poured himself a bourbon on the rocks and swallowed half of it before he got back to his wife and looked at her in a way that surprised Archer. It wasn't angry or hurt or full of bluster. It was a look of resignation, of hopelessness. They sat hip to hip in the same chair, one of her hands resting on his thigh, Archer noted, in a protective manner. Douglas said,
"I wish I knew more to tell you, Archer, but things are not adding up."
"Sheen's dying, for one," noted Archer.
"I can't understand who would want to hurt Wilson."
"You want to hear my theory?" They both settled their gazes on him. "You actually told me yourself," said Archer. Douglas frowned.
"You're going to have to spell it out, Archer. My thoughts are not too clear right now."
"One question. Have the police been by to see you?" Douglas wiped his brow.
"No, but I think that situation is about to change from what I've heard. But tell me why someone would want to kill Wilson."
"Your wife has an alibi for the time Ruby Fraser was killed. She was with friends for dinner. Now that alibi needs to be verified, and it will be. But the thing is, as you told me, Wilson Sheen was your only alibi for the time Fraser was murdered. You had dinner with him, and then a meeting during the time Fraser was killed. Which means you no longer have an alibi, because dead men can't give them." Douglas swallowed the rest of his bourbon and collapsed back against the chair.
"Right," he said. "I hadn't thought of that."
Beth looked worriedly at him, and then said to Archer,
"What can be done?"
"I'm not sure,
but I do know that your husband is being set up as a patsy to take the fall. I never had anything to do with Ruby Fraser, I swear. Archer glanced at Beth. She had told him she didn't know whether her husband was sleeping with the lady. But now, in her countenance, he only saw belief in Douglas's words. She gripped his hand to show her support. Okay, I believe you, said Archer.
You do?
I've seen and heard of other ladies throwing themselves at you. No go on their part. Why would that be? He looked at Beth. Because he loves you. Beth looked at Douglas, and Archer saw a glimmer of tears there, from both of them. But you're not out of the woods, continued Archer. Talk to me about the island.
I don't know anything about...
Good Lord, what is that? A door could be heard banging open. There was a shout, followed by mingled cries and feet pounding fast toward where they were. Archer had risen, his hand moving to his .38. The Kempers stood, too, staring at the doorway, their arms around one another. Archer quickly moved the hand away from the gun when he saw who was arriving at the party. Chief Carl Pickett and four of his beefy coppers, looking all nice and shiny in their brass buttons, clipped hats, shoulder straps, big guns, and brash countenances. Archer could see they were all excited, and he knew why. Rousting a poor slob was not a thrill. They probably did it every day. But slinging mud at the rich, carrying them out of their palaces, now that could get a man's blood going. Pickett eyed all of them there, and a grin spread over his face as he extracted a small stogie from his pocket and took a moment to light up.
Well, well, said Pickett, as the three stood there staring at him.
What do you want? Demanded Douglas, and it was clearly a demand. Pickett strolled over to him.
Don't go all high and mighty on me, Kemper. You might be married to the boss's daughter, but that means shit to me.
I'm my own boss.
Whatever you say. But what I've come here to say is, you're under arrest.
For what?
Do I really have to spell it out for you and upset the missus?
You're damn right you do,
insisted Beth.
Okay. You're being arrested for the murders of Ruby Fraser and Wilson Sheen.
What would possibly be my motivation?
You were betting Fraser, and Sheen found out and was blackmailing you for it, replied Pickett. That comes out, you're not going to be the mayor of this town.
That's absurd,
cried out Beth.
He was not sleeping with that woman.
Well then, how did we find a pair of his cufflinks in her bedroom, along with a shirt belonging to him that has blood on it, that matches the blood type of the deceased woman? How did two witnesses swear on the Bible that they saw him in the company of Miss Fraser on the night she died, and that they had seen the two a week earlier in Mr. Kemper's Rolls-Royce Phantom?
Pickett sidled up to Kemper and said in a low voice,
If you want to screw around with other women, you really need to do it in a low-down Ford.
And Sheen? Said Archer. Pickett gave him a withering look.
What are you doing here, whatever your name is? Willie off in the bottle and sent the schoolboy to cover for him?
The name's Archer. And what evidence do you have that Kemper killed Sheen? Pickett got so close that Archer could smell the cheap gin on the man's breath.
Well, let me tell you, Archer. The autopsy on Sheen showed enough barbiturates in his stomach to make a horse go nighty-night. And Sheen and Kemper were seen having drinks at the club earlier that night. A perfect setup to slip the man a Mickey and then come back later and kill him.
You're crazy, said Kemper. I was having dinner with Wilson when Fraser was killed.
Sure. Sure you were. Anybody else verify that?
No. We were at the office alone.
And he's dead and can't verify that. Right,
scoffed Pickett.
Of all the lame excuses.
He looked at his men.
Take him away.
I'll call my father,
Beth said quickly, giving her husband a kiss on the cheek before he was handcuffed and led away. Pickett said,
Not even Daddy will be able to get his little prince out of this jam, lady.
And Archer thought he might just be right about that. Chapter 58 Now it was just Beth and Archer.
This is ridiculous,
said Beth.
Douglas wouldn't harm a fly.
They didn't arrest him for harming a fly, Archer pointed out.
My father will know what to do.
She rushed from the room, leaving Archer alone. He mixed himself a whiskey and soda. He was drinking it in his chair when Beth returned about 15 minutes later.
My father will be here shortly. He's as distraught as I am.
But what do you really think he can do?
He can do something. You don't believe Douglas killed those people, do you?
No, but I can't prove it.
He hired you. You have to help him.
He hired us to find the truth. That's the road we're going down.
The truth will be enough,
said Beth firmly. Yeah, said Archer. That and 10 cents won't get you a cup of coffee. So talk to me about the island.
I don't know anything about it.
I need you to try. You were at the harbor that night when your father came back in on the boat. Why were you there?
I thought he might be there.
Archer shook his head. It was almost 3 in the morning. He didn't take a ride down there on the chance that you might run into him. She lit another cigarette and blew puffs of smoke to the ceiling. She finally looked at him.
I need a drink,
she said. Dry Manhattan again?
Something stronger than that.
Archer rose and poured out 3 fingers of scotch, neat. If that doesn't do it for you, go to the hospital and get some morphine. He sat back down and picked up his glass and watched the lady drink hers. When your father gets here, will the 2 palookas be with him?
I don't know. Probably. They usually go where he goes.
I have it on good authority that they've been ordered to do me in on account of I've been snooping around that island. She glanced up sharply.
What good authority?
Good authority.
You're saying that my father wants to have you killed because of your snooping around that island.
You need to try that line again, Beth, and add in surprise this time. It's like eating spaghetti without the meatballs.
Oh, so now I'm in on the conspiracy against you.
Archer swallowed the rest of his drink and shook his head. Wanting a man dead doesn't have to constitute a conspiracy. You just need someone willing to do the deed and a weapon with which to do it. And there are lots of both around this town, I've found.
Well, then you better scram before the death squad gets here.
Since you won't spill on the island, let me do some spilling. He lit up a Lucky, bent the match, and flicked it into the empty fireplace. Casinos on that island would be worth more money than even your old man has ever made, I'm thinking.
You can't have casinos in California. You can only bet on horses and play in card clubs.
Yeah, like the ones your hubby likes to frequent. He was at Midnight Moods tonight in the front row watching my friend Liberty Callahan light up the place. She's the only woman I know around here who might give you a run for your money in the loveliness business.
My, Archer. You're so free with your compliments.
My point is, why go out for filet mignon if you already have it at home? She looked down and said demurely,
Sometimes the grass is greener. But casinos really are a no-go in this state. So why all the interest in that island?
That chunk of rock isn't part of California. It was owned by the feds, and then sold to the Stearman Enterprises. The surveyors have already started to work it.
Which surveyors?
Lancet. He watched her catch a breath, and her face changed color. Yeah, I thought that might be the case. There's only one hitch in the giddy-up I haven't pegged yet.
What's that?
She said dumbly. Before Archer answered, they could hear footsteps. A few moments later, Sawyer Armstrong appeared, hat in hand, and, thankfully, with no Hank and Tony behind him. Chapter 59 Armstrong's gaze flicked around the room before alighting and holding on his daughter. He hurried across and wrapped his long arms around her. Oh, honey, this must be very distressing for you. Archer watched Beth Kemper. If he'd used the flower metaphor before, now it was like acid had been thrown on the bloom. She wilted as though every molecule of water had been drained from her at the man's touch. He tilted her chin up so she would look at him. He was dressed more formally tonight, a 3-piece wool suit with a colorful cravat. His hat was a dark brown fedora with a crimson band. A pair of specs poked out from his breast pocket. "We will make this right, Beth," he said. Archer thought, well, there's a lot of wriggle room in that statement. He looked around and spotted Archer. Armstrong slowly let the woman go and faced him.
I was under the impression that you had been warned to stay away from Beth.
It's all right, Dad,
said Beth.
I said...
He put up a hand, and she stopped and stepped back.
Archer, I'm waiting for an answer.
I didn't hear a question, but maybe that's just me. By the way, where are Laurel and Hardy? Out beating up some old ladies for their church money? Those lines didn't even warrant the tiniest of smiles from Armstrong. The man turned to Beth.
I'll talk to Carl. I'm sure this can be rectified.
They have evidence, or so they say, commented Archer, one eye on Armstrong, and his other on the doorway waiting for Hank and Tony to appear. Pretty compelling stuff. Cufflinks, bloody shirt with guess who's blood on it, eyewitness testimony, stomach contents from Sheen. I'm no lawyer, but even a bad DA could make hay out of that. Armstrong said,
You and Willie never gave me an answer on my offer. I don't like to be kept waiting.
I work for him. It's his call.
Then tell him what I said, and just do it.
By any means necessary? Asked Archer, with a glance at Beth, who looked at the floor and nothing else.
I won't tell Willie or you how to do your job. I'd appreciate the same courtesy.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll be going, then. He looked at Beth. You gonna be okay?
She'll be fine, Archer, now that I'm here, Armstrong answered for her.
The night sky was bursting with stars, the air chilly enough to make him feel alive. And yet with all that, part of Archer felt dead inside as he steered the Delahay back down the mountain. The scent of eucalyptus was so strong, he felt his eyes start to water. He glanced at his timepiece. He debated whether to go back to Midnight Moods, but then decided against it. He opted to return to the office, call Dash, wake him up if necessary, and get his advice. He pulled to the curb in front of the office building and got out. The front door to the building was unlocked, and Archer proceeded down the hall toward the stairs. He reached the elevator and stopped. The elevator's outer door was partially open because there was something blocking it, and that something was an arm with a gnarled hand at the end of it. Archer quickly pushed the door all the way open, revealing Earl, lying there, his face pointed to the side.
Earl, you okay? Earl!
The man's eyes were closed, and it was dark enough that Archer couldn't see whether he was breathing or not. He might have had a heart attack, or maybe a stroke. He knelt down and felt around the man's neck. He didn't need to check for a pulse, because when he pulled his fingers back, the clotted blood came with them. Archer pivoted on the balls of his feet for a better look at the little man. He tipped the chin back a bit and saw the slash across the neck. This was Ruby Fraser all over again. The man was cold. He'd been dead a while, but his limbs weren't stiff. Archer looked around the elevator car and saw what looked to be a pile of blankets in one corner, along with a newspaper and the bottle of booze he had seen before. Archer sniffed the air. From out of the pile of blankets, he pulled a raw onion, half-eaten, and a knuckle of bread with some roast beef inserted in it, along with a pair of underwear and a torn sock. The guy was living here? He backed out of the car and hurried toward the stairs, and stopped again. A door off the hall was open. The door jamb was shredded, and the locking side of the door had a long crack in it. Archer eyed the name stenciled on the door. Myron O'Donnell, M.D. Archer recalled the name because O'Donnell was the surgeon who'd recently removed Beth Kemper's appendix. He eased the broken door open.
Hello? Dr. O'Donnell. You okay?
It's Archer from upstairs. I work for Willie Dash. There was no response. The place had the feel of a tomb. Archer nipped at his gun and pointed it around. He worked his way through the front reception room, which had six wooden-backed chairs all in a row, and a coffee table with magazines spread out on it. He spied an old Look magazine from 1948, and a Life magazine from August with a toothy Joe DiMaggio on the cover.
Hello?
Said Archer. He reached another door and pushed it open. This must be where O'Donnell kept his drug dispensary. The glass cabinet was smashed open, and bottles and spilled pills littered the floor. Archer left this room and headed on. The next room was O'Donnell's office. Archer could tell because the man's diplomas were on the wall. There was a desk with two chairs on the patient's side and one office chair on the other. And in the office chair was a dead man. Chapter 60 Archer rushed up to the fourth floor to make sure that Dash had not been a victim as well. When he unlocked the door and burst into Dash's office a few moments later, he heard a voice call out,
"One more step and you get a third eye, Buster. It's me, Archer."
Dash turned on a light, revealing him sitting on the side of the bed, holding a lethal-looking .32 Colt.
"What the hell are you doing here?"
And Archer told him what he was doing there. Dash hurriedly dressed and raced out without bothering to don his toupee. They first went to look at Earl.
"Shit,"
Dash said. Then he followed Archer to the doctor's office. Dash looked down at the body.
"Shit twice,"
he muttered. "Who is it? Dr. O'Donnell?" Dash nodded, picked up the dead doctor's phone, and made a call.
"Ernie Prettyman on duty?"
"Yeah, right.
Tell him it's Willie Dash.
Thanks." A few moments passed, and then Prettyman came on. Dash told him what had happened.
"Okay, Ern, we'll be here,"
said Dash in reply to whatever Prettyman had said. Dash put down the phone and said,
"Okay, you look like you have something to tell me."
Pickett arrested Kemper for the murders of Fraser and Sheen. Archer told him all about the evidence Pickett said he had on Kemper, and the fact that Beth had called her father and that Armstrong had showed up a bit later.
"I'm sure Pickett paid top dollar for the eyewitness accounts," said Dash. "And the other stuff is easy to massage into evidence of anything you want it to."
"We can't fight the whole police force, Willie."
"Maybe not. Let's go analyze this sucker and see what they were really after."
In the dispensary, Dash carefully looked over the tossed bottles and spilled pills. Then he stepped back and said,
"Tell me what you see here, Archer. Take your time and think it over."
Archer bent down and picked up some of the bottles and scooped up some of the pills. He compared some pills with some bottles and even put some of the scattered pills back in the bottles. He looked up at Dash. This thing was staged, to make it look like a robbery with drugs as the loot. Dash nodded.
"You're right, but explain to me your reasoning."
Archer stood and held out two half-empty bottles and a handful of pills. "This is morphine, and these pills are amphetamines, worth a small fortune on the street."
"That's right.
But when you compare the pills they spilled with the space left inside the bottles, they pretty much tally. So they didn't take any narcotics with them.
And they didn't have to smash the cabinet open, the keys and the lock. The idiots obviously didn't see it, or else they would have taken it with them."
"Did you know O'Donnell?" Dash nodded.
"He was a good guy. A good doctor.
Why would anyone want to kill him?"
"That's principally why they call it a mystery, Archer."
"So do we wait here for Prettyman?"
"Now that I know Pickett has arrested Kemper, I'm pretty damn certain that Earn's not going to show up here.
Pickett will.
And then I think I might actually fear for our safety."
"So what do we do?"
"You got your car out front?"
"Yeah." On the way out, Dash stopped at Earl's body. He knelt down and closed the man's eyes.
"He was a crook, and he hated my guts. But anybody who thinks they had a harder life with fewer opportunities than Earl is seriously fooling themselves."
"You think he was in the wrong place at the wrong time?"
"Maybe. Let's hit the road before Carl Pickett hits us."
"Where are we going?"
"I think it's time to check in with our client."